I've been really surprised at how many people who listen to this podcast have reached out to me about having me speak at their events. I love that. And here's why. Over the last 13 years, I've had the honor to help hundreds of companies like Nissan, Walmart, Microsoft, and Comedy Central at events around the world. And during that time, I've developed three big goals for your event. Number one, I want to slingshot your audience into the best year they've ever had. Whether I'm opening, closing, or somewhere in the middle of the event, I want to launch everyone out of that room with actionable, memorable things that they can apply to their work and lives immediately. Number two, my second goal, I want the sound team engaged and laughing. The sound team has heard it all. They have. And if I can make them laugh and learn along the way, the audience is going to absolutely love the keynote. And number three, my third goal, I want you to get text messages during the keynote. My favorite sentence to hear from you after I speak is, "John, my phone was blowing up during your keynote." I'm there to make you look like a rock star, not me. If your boss texts you during my speech and compliments you on how well the event is going, then I know I've done my job. Whether it's virtual or live, 10,000 people in an arena, or 15 sales team members on WebEx or Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I'd love to help you with your next event. Fill out the quick form at acuff.me/speaking to check my availability. That's acuff, acuff.me/speaking. Hey everyone, and welcome to the All It Takes a Goal podcast. If you're new around here, I'm a late bloomer who discovered the power of goals in his mid-30s. Now I'm on a furious mission to create the accelerators I wish I had in my 20s. I'm your host, John Acuff, and today I'm joined by Craig Groeschel. Who's Craig Groeschel? Craig Groeschel is the New York Times best-selling author and founding and senior pastor of Life Church, which created the free YouVersion Bible app and is one of the largest churches in the world. He's written more than 15 books and hosts the top-ranking Craig Groeschel Leadership Podcast. He speaks regularly for the Global Leadership Network, which reaches hundreds of thousands of leaders around the world every year. He and his wife, Amy, live in Oklahoma. I've been friends with Craig for about 13 or 14 years now. I met him back when I was working for Dave Ramsey. We've done events together. He's one of the most high-performing people I've ever met. He's super encouraging, super inspiring. He's been performing at a really high level for a long time while still staying humble. Not an easy feat. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. I think you're going to absolutely love it. Craig, I'm so excited that you joined me today. We've actually known each other for a long time. I think the first time we met was when I came out to Oklahoma and I spoke at a small little event that you were doing with Dave Ramsey. So it's so fun to see you again. We did GLS together a couple years ago. So thank you for joining me, Craig.
Hey, John, it's an honor to be with you. And I remember the first time you spoke here and then at GLS. We're not allowed to share the rankings. It's kind of top secret, but I will tell you that you ranked very, 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 very high.
I appreciate that at
GLS, and I've admired your work forever and ever. You got great content, and thankful to have you as a friend.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. I'm curious, Craig. The podcast is about goals, and I'd love to kind of know how you approach goals. Are you you write them down? Are you I do an annual review, I look at them weekly. What's kind of the Craig Groeschel ecosystem when it comes to goals?
I'm glad you asked about that. So my my process and mindset around goals has changed quite a bit over the years. Years ago, I was really, really kind of goal-driven in what I call my outcome goals. Like, I want to see this much growth in this area, or lose this much weight, or be able to lift this much weight, whatever it would be. And my process has changed quite a bit. Now, John, instead of creating outcome goals where I want to control the outcome, I'm more about input goals. So I want to do certain actions that I believe are going to work toward the outcomes. And so for me, it would be like today, when we're finished with this podcast, I'm actually going to walk out the door, go straight to my gym, meet a guy there, and we have a whole plan for it. So my goal is not to hit a certain outcome of I want to be at this percent body fat or be able to lift this much weight, but I want to be in the gym this many times doing certain things. So I'm very, very process oriented in my goals. And I believe that if I can achieve the right inputs in different areas of my lives, then I can come up with the right outcomes. I can't always control the outcomes, but I can control the inputs. So I have a ton of what I might call input goals.
Okay. I love that differentiation. One of the things I say sometimes is I'm the CEO of my actions, not the CEO of my outcomes.
That's, you said it better. In one sentence, I rambled for
four minutes. That's what I was thinking. But you mentioned you go with a friend. How many of your goals, whether it's, you know, what you're doing with the team at Life Church, what you're doing in your personal life, how many of them involve other people as accountability, as support, as you're doing it together? Are a lot of them people-based?
I would say I'm going to have to think about it, but I don't think I can think of anything that I'm doing that is significant or meaningful that's not people-based. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, just at this stage of life, I've got some goals that would be considered almost non-professional. And, you know, I'm a pastor, I'd say non-spiritual, and almost they appear to be kind of selfish entertainment goals, which oddly enough, at this stage of life, I find to be very, very important to help me be professional or to help me be spiritual. For so much of my life, all my goals were, you know, productive outcome driven goals of grow this much, increase this much, succeed in these ways. And I'm finding now that in order to be productive, effective, healthy, mentally, physically, if I'm not creating some external entertainment distractions, then I'm not as good elsewhere. So like we talked before about your friend who is a pilot and trying to get you to go up. Yeah. I have input goals on how much time I'm going to fly. I've got my pilot's license a few years ago, which oddly enough, that kind of distraction from the work that I do mentally helps me to be more productive where I am. So I've found at this stage of life that creating goals that even distract me, disengage my mind from what I do, helps me re-engage my mind at higher levels of productivity.
Did you find that, let's take flight as an example, it was helpful for you to have a goal where you couldn't be the best? Like you knew, okay, because there's a lot of things when you're goal-driven, you can go, I want to be the best at this or I want to hit the top level. But you know right now, when you got into that, you weren't going to be a fighter pilot. You knew you weren't like, and if I buckle down, Top Gun, let's go. I'm going to be the world's, you know. Did that give you a release to enjoy it in a different way?
Oddly enough, so I was probably like you, pretty driven. And if I guess 4 years ago, I started working with a counselor who gave me an assignment to find some things to distract me. And his assignment for my personality type, this wouldn't work for everybody, but it had to be something that was adrenaline producing, felt kind of dangerous, adventurous, and oddly enough, it had to be with other people. So the two things I took up in my 50s, I started training in jiu-jitsu with, if you don't know what that is, it's like an MMA, when you drop to the ground and try to submit each other, that's jiu-jitsu. And then I started taking flying lessons, and I got my private pilot's license, and then I got my instrument rating. And oddly enough, I just wasn't good at either one. Took me a long time, still a student. And so, yes, 100%. Those are two things that increase at the same time my humility and my confidence. It's my humility because I'm not great. I have to be a student. I have to work hard. My learning curve was steep. And then my confidence because I'm getting better, 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 better. So like being a pilot, no, I did not feel good, but there's no such thing as settling for being a not good pilot, right?
Average pilots don't last long.
Not an option, right? So I've had to work really hard at it. And it has been, I would say, I continue to grow. And now I am capable pilot, but I love being humbled and having a lot of room to grow. And so that translates back into kind of my leadership, which is at this stage of the game, I feel more humble. In my 20s and 30s, I thought I knew more. And the longer you do it, the more you recognize you just don't know that much. So I like at this stage of life saying, yes, I'm a student. And humility is a very, very big part of growth. And so I am really good at being humble in a lot of different areas right now because I recognize how much I don't know.
Oh, that's good. The idea of practicing humility. I love that. You've mentioned two things already that I feel like are in the Craig Rochelle toolbox. One is partners, people. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to meet this guy.
Yes,
the
yes,
other
yes.
is a counselor. So I go, I'm going to see mine tomorrow, a guy named Chip Dodd. He wrote this amazing book, The Voice of the Heart. And it's funny when I talk to other men, sometimes I go, oh, a counselor. And I go, I mean, a performance coach. And they go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like Steph Curry. Like, yeah. It's funny. Any elite athlete who's really performing at a high level has a mindset coach. They have a counselor. They have a spiritual director, whatever phrase. What do you think are some other things that are in the toolbox of somebody who wants a long-term sustained ability to use their gifts to the fullest?
Yeah.
So you've mentioned two. What else is in the toolbox?
Yeah. So I think those are, and again, I want to repeat those because they're super important, is that, you know, everyone says like you're the average of the five people you hang out with, blah, 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 blah. It's actually pretty dang true, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to get better, you want to be around people that are better than you. So working with other people is big. Having a coach, a mentor, people that speak into your life is massive. I'm a big believer in not having a mentor. I want targeted, specific mentors, meaning I want a financial mentor. I want physical mentors. I want spiritual mentors. I want relational mentors. I want leadership mentors. So I want a lot of people speaking into my life. I would say other things would be like very consistent disciplines have to be a massive high priority in your life. It's not what we do occasionally that brings about greatness. It's what we do consistently. So in any area of any high performer you talk to, they're going to have their own version of very specific, almost like custom-made disciplines to bring about their specific results. For example, you write a lot more than I do. You write a lot of comedy, which is really, really hard to do. And so I can guarantee you, and I don't know, but I know you've got writing disciplines that are a big part of your life. I'm producing leadership content in ways that other people aren't. So if I'm not taking in high volumes of leadership content, there's no way I can internalize it, personalize it, digest it, and push it back out. So I have to have intake disciplines in order to have outputs in different areas of life. So I say there's going to be accountability. There's going to be coaching, mentoring. There's going to be consistent disciplines. And then kind of like we talked about earlier, there's got to be moments of humility where you just recognize you don't know it all. The moment you become well-known for something, you start talking more than anybody else. They ask you questions. And that's the moment your learning peaks. You're going to be a person that asks more questions. When I get with you, it's always fun because I'm trying to ask you more questions and you're trying to ask me more. You're a student. You're always asking questions. And that's because you're smart. You want to learn from the people that you're with. The one who talks the least tends to learn the most. And so those would be some things that come to mind that are really, really, really important and you don't always see in everybody.
Yeah, and it's been fun for me because we've known each other for a while. I've seen you pour into younger people for the last 15, 16, 17 years. Like I've seen other young pastors that a lot of it goes unseen. Like it's not something you're doing for the public. It's not something that you say, okay, I wanna pour back into this person. I'm curious what you think about this idea. So the older I get, the more I realize that for me to live into my potential, who I was created to be, open the gifts that I've been given, I really have to deal specifically with two things, my ability to handle stress and my ability to handle excitement. So call it cortisol and dopamine. And I've had to very deliberately go, wow, I've got to change that. How have you, because I think at each new level, there's new levels of cortisol, there's new levels of dopamine that you have to say, you know what? I can't get stuck on that. I can't. Mm-hmm. And the example I'd give you is I know I'm not living out of my potential when I stop writing a book because it's hard and I won't get dopamine on it for 2 years. And I go to social to get an instant hit. I got a like on a post. But I want the long-term gratification of the book because that's going to last for years versus the short-term shallow dopamine. How have you managed that kind of cortisol dopamine as you've grown bigger things, tried bigger things, and stepped into bigger positions?
You know what? I love that question. I've never heard anyone ask it that way. And this is actually something I wouldn't normally put it in those phrases, but this is something that I study in my own life and leadership all the time. right before we met, I just was meeting with my assistant and I told her, I've been mapping out my moods. What is it that contributes to kind of a positive outcome? And when is it that I struggle? And the reason I'm doing that is because I can be all over the place and how I feel impacts what I produce, how I feel impacts how I treat people, how I feel impacts the quality of my marriage. And what happens is a lot of times we feel like, I think a lot of leaders are almost victims of whatever happens and they just react rather than they're proactive. The fact that you recognize that you go to Instagram for the dopamine hit is very, very brilliant. What we have to do is we have to recognize where is it that we're maybe even wrongly getting rewarded, that's short-circuiting our ability to produce something that's going to create the longer-term benefit, and then name it, call it what it is. And so I am even actively right now charting out what is it that contributes to real self-worth versus what is a short-term hit? What is it that helps me to produce out of an overflow versus trying to produce out of desperation? And, you know, if I got real transparent, it's like kind of silly sometimes what it is and what it's not, but to be able to call it what it is. And you know, like we talked about flying, it is hard to describe. The plane that I fly belongs to a friend of mine. It's in the shop right now. And then the weather's bad. We haven't been able to fly for a while and it has negatively impacted my production because I am locked in on content right now. All I'm doing is producing content. And so there's a drag without any kind of recharging the battery. Mm-hmm. When I fly, I don't think about anything, maybe because I'm still a newer pilot. I've got 250 hours, so that would be considered very, very new. Mm-hmm. I'm fully immersed in it. It disconnects my brain. I have to have something like that. Every leader does. If you don't know what it is, if you don't have it, then eventually the battery drains and you become not as effective, not as productive. And then you go try to get quick charges, quick hits, and those may give you the dopamine hit, but those aren't lasting and those won't give you the confidence, the health to continue on in leadership. So the fact that you're talking about that, I think is something worth discussing, dissecting, analyzing, because we all need to know what helps us grow, what settles us, what makes us more secure, and think long term.
And I think the world's getting better at using that against you. That's the other thing. I keep telling people, Netflix doesn't want you to lose weight. They don't want you to get your pilot's license. They don't want you to write a book. Like their goal is you binge watch their show and never change your life. Like that's their mission, and your mission is the opposite of that. Yep. So you've got to kind of think about that. I'm curious. Go ahead.
No. I don't want to interrupt, but everything is. I mean, every product wants your money. Every source of information wants your attention. Yep. And if you're not proactively choosing where your mind goes, where your attention goes, where your money goes, then you become a victim of everybody else's agenda and you don't grow in any way at all. It's stacked against us. We have to be intentional. Yeah. Nobody... Yeah. Does what you did accidentally. You have to work against all the forces trying to take you into someone else's agenda or their products.
Yeah. Speaking of kind of forces that take you into other people's agenda or other, you know, because the joke I'll sometimes do is even dating apps don't want you to get married. They'd rather you have 100 meaningless hookups because then you don't quit the app. Like their goal isn't you have a long lasting marriage that's beautiful and you use the app once. That's not their goal. So I'm curious. I know you've probably studied this. When you think about what knocks a leader out, so we don't have to look hard to find examples of people that are headed in a good direction and then something happened, headed in a good direction and then some part of their world kind of cratered and it fell apart. I know you've looked at that. You've thought about that. You're actively thinking about that. It's not one and done. What do you say, or what would you say are some of the things that, whether you're a young person building your life, whether you're a middle age and you're in your 40s and 50s and you're going, I got 20 more years to kind of think about this, whether you're an older leader, what are some of the ways that leaders trip up as they go about building their lives?
Big question. In fact, the book Think Ahead really does talk a lot to that. There's so many ways. It's hard to know where to start. So let's just start with the basics that you start to become more successful. When you become more successful, what happens? You have more options. With more options, it's easy to become distracted. And so at the very basics, one of the ways that people lose their effectiveness is they just are not focused. In order to be highly successful, you have to be very, very disciplined to say no. If there's anything that's worked well in our ministry and leadership of the church, it's that we have not done what a lot of large churches do to stay focused. You have to say no. So that's just the basics in staying successful. Then when it comes to the things that trip us up, the moment we start to become more successful, the moment we are way more vulnerable to pride, and we know what happens when you're proud, you fall into all sorts of temptations. With success comes traps. In my world, if you cross a moral line, you're done. Yeah. If you cross a financial line, you're done. If you stop listening to people, eventually you're done. And so what we have to do, John, I think, is we have to be very, very clear on what type of a leader do we want to be? Who do we want to be? We got to be ridiculously clear on our values. The clearer our values will be, the easier our decisions will be. And then, in my opinion, one of the biggest things we can do is we can set up systems to safeguard ourselves from where we're vulnerable. Everybody's vulnerable to something different. I have more systems in my life, more levels of accountability than you could ever imagine. Number one, because it's important. Number two is because I know that in a moment of weakness or vulnerability, I could be stupid. And so I want to eliminate my ability to be stupid. The more leader thinks that she doesn't need accountability, the dumber she is. The more a guy thinks he doesn't need boundaries, the dumber he is. Mm-hmm. And so we have to create accountability, transparency, in everything from our finances to our relationships. And to me, it's all the way. I mean, it's down to the technology I use, sharing passwords so I don't have secrets, blah, 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 blah. But we're all going to be tempted, and we can eliminate some temptation today by being smart. Why would we resist a temptation in the future if we have the power to eliminate it today? Mm-hmm. If we can create whatever systems we need to keep us transparent, to keep us honest, to keep us vulnerable, to keep us humble, those things matter so much. One of the biggest things you talk about other people in your life is we have to have people in our lives that can tell us no. Mm-hmm. We have to have people in our lives that can tell us that's dumb. We have to have people in your life say, don't say that again. Don't wear that. Don't do that. Don't go there. Don't touch that. You know. Yeah. And if we don't have people that can talk to us that way, it's only a matter of time before we self-destruct.
Yeah, and that's not easy. Like for me, the people that tell me no or can tell me the truth, like, I've always said, you need to have people in your life who love you enough to tell you things you won't like to hear, who love you. And I remember I ended a blog post once, this is probably 10 years ago, and I said, who's going to be the next Donald Miller? And a friend of mine was like, hey, buddy, you ended it that way because you wanted people to say it was you. That's why you wrote that. I was like, oh, like at first I was like, no, I didn't. I was like, yeah, I did. That was insecurity. That was insecurity. I'm curious, Craig, I feel like Think Ahead is one of your most practical, tactical, like, books you've ever written. There's just so much rich, do this, try this. Here's it's my favorite kind of book because it answers the question, okay, great, what do I do with this on a Tuesday? Mm-hmm. What do I do with this on a Thursday? Mm-hmm. So when somebody reads this, what's your hope for what they experience in this book? What do you hope, okay, it's a week after they've read it. What's your hope?
So here's what we have to acknowledge. For the most part, our lives are the sum total of the decisions that we made for better or for worse. The quality of our lives is in most cases a reflection of the quality of our decisions. And so there are a lot of things that we want in life that we don't have because we made the wrong decisions, right? Yeah. And we've got certain values, like I value this and I want this, but in the moment I end up making a bad decision. Why? Lots of reasons. One, I had decision fatigue. Two, I was overly emotional. I made a permanent decision based on temporary emotions. Three is I was afraid of making the wrong decision, so I made no decision, whatever. I had analysis paralysis. So lots of reasons why we end up making the wrong decision. My goal is that anyone who reads this book would look at some area of their life, one area, and say, if I can think ahead, I know I'm going to face multiple scenarios that are similar that are either if I make the right decision, I'm going to get the right outcome. If I make the wrong decision, I'm going to be still overweight, broke, miserable, alone, angry, depressed, not living up to my potential, whatever it is. I want them to recognize the pattern in their life and say, if I think ahead, when I'm in this certain situation, I have predetermined this is the type of action that I'm going to take. And I do this in so many areas of my life, not because I'm smart, not because I'm good, but because I'm dumb and because I'm desperate.
Yeah.
If I don't decide tomorrow what I'm going to eat, which I already have, I'll eat donuts when they come in. If they're chocolate covered, I'll eat three of them. And I know that about myself. So I've predetermined to have the right snacks in my office, so I'm not hungry when they bring the donuts in. And there's 100 areas of my life like that that are working well today. Not because I'm naturally disciplined, but because I know I'm not disciplined. And I've pre-decided over and over again different things. And it's a matter of, John, for me, it's one or two a year. I'm taking on a new discipline. I got a new decision. And over a period of 10 years, that equals 10 or 20 new systems in my life that work. And so if there's anything effective today, it's not the result of three massive decisions I made in my 30s or 40s. It's a result of thousands of little decisions and lots of pre-decisions that are in place that accumulate over time and compound into the kind of life that I want to live. And it's not based on discipline. It's based on the fact that I'm not disciplined. It's not based on being smart. It's because I'm dumb. I need to have these things in place.
I love that. It reminds me of something this author named Keith Cunningham said. He said, I'm not smart enough or talented enough to be unprepared. And I love that line.
I love the way I talk for 4 minutes and then you summarize it in one statement.
This is the first time you've done that. I'm trying to add to it. I'm adding to it. So here's my version of that.
Something with words one day. You might do something with words because you're pretty good at it.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Here's how I think about it. I wrote this the other day. Night me is in charge of decisions. Morning me is in charge of actions. I don't let morning me make decisions because he's going to go, let's not run. Let's not work out. Let's not do anything. He will talk me out of everything. But night me, who has clarity and is like, nah, like this is what we're eating tomorrow. Yep. That's how I think about it. Mark. I'm curious if you do games like that, because I think anyone who's high performing plays little games throughout the day. So the game might be, okay, I did this at this speed last time. I'm going to see if I can do a little faster, or I'm going to, you know, are there some games you play with yourself? Some like, these are the Craig Rochelle games that I like to kind of keep track of or play silly stuff.
Yeah, totally silly stuff. So Amy and I, my wife, we do this walk that's kind of long. Most people would give up. And literally, it's a very hard walk. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the walk, there's a T in the painting on the road. And so I go all the way up to it, and I have to touch the T with my foot, or it doesn't count. Yeah. And so she'll get 6 inches from the T, won't do it, just to prove that it doesn't matter. And for me, I call it touching the line. So I actually have to touch the line, or it doesn't matter. It doesn't count. Journaling is the same way for me, is that it wasn't a good day unless I documented it. And for me, I couldn't journal for years and years. And so now is if I put it down and document it, that indicates it was a good day. And the rule is every day is a good day. Meaning if it was a bad day and I learned from it, it was a good day. If it's a good day and I document it, it was a good day. So at the end of the day, I'm always going to have a good day. And that's what I do. I journal. I floss every day. If anyone's listened to me for a long time, they've heard me say this because I hate flossing. And so when I floss, what I tell myself in my mind is I'm a disciplined person. Because I floss, I'm obviously going to be nice to my wife. I'm going to go to bed early. I'm going to get up early. I'm going to do my Bible time. I'm going to be productive. I'm going to be good at work. I'm going to come home and be a great husband because I floss. If I don't floss, I'm not going to be nice to Amy. She's not going to kiss me goodnight. I'm going to go to bed mad. I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to wake up late. Yeah. I'm not going to do my Bible time. I'm going to go to work in a bad mood. I'm going to have a bad, not productive day. I'm going to leave home late. I'm going to get pulled over by the police for driving home late. I'm going to chew them out. I'm going to get arrested. I'm going to be in prison. Why? Because I didn't floss. Yeah. So obviously silly, but it's a small little game I play that tells me I am disciplined. So if I thought about it for a while, I could probably think of 10 others. It would be even more ridiculous. But yes, I think that it's a fun way to say this is something small I do that helps me become more of whatever I want to be.
I I love that because I'm constantly, and my wife will say, what are you thinking about right now? And I'll tell her the game I'm playing. She'll go, that makes no sense. And I'm like, yeah, but I flossed 100 days in a row. So I don't care if it's weird, if it works. Like, I really don't. Yes. I mean, you talk about weird all the time. I don't care if it's weird, if it works. I'm wondering, do you ever, like, I loved pre-deciding. I think that's a really awesome concept. There was so much that I was like, oh my gosh, this is so validating, so encouraging in your book. I think everyone's going to love Think Ahead. I want to give you an example of something I rehearsed, and then I'm curious if you ever rehearse situations to figure out how you want to be in the situation. So I was speaking at an event in California, and Marcus Buckingham was one of the other speakers, and I knew based on past experience that I would be insecure in that moment. I knew I'd be tempted to overtell him my accomplishments, miss any learning from him, and try to, you know, read him my resume, bow up out of insecurity. So I decided, how can I honor him? And that became a question I started to ask every day. Who will I see today and how can I honor them? And I realized, what if I listen to his book ahead of time, his most recent book? And you know, green rooms, nobody's read your book. And if I say to him, hey, I just read your most recent book and here's what I think about it, it would light him up. And so I did that. And then it became part of my process, but I didn't get there until I sat down mentally and I rehearsed the moment. I pre-decided the moment. Mm-hmm. What are examples of something you've pre-decided or something you've rehearsed before the actual moment? So then once the moment happens, you got muscle memory. You haven't even done the moment yet. You already have pre-muscle memory. Mm-hmm. What's an example of how you've done that?
Well, first I want to comment on that too. I was with Marcus recently and he gave one of the best talks I've heard in the last 10 years. I mean, it's like truly one of the best talks. And so for you to do that is so smart, because I have had those moments so often with someone I respect where I overtalk, overshare, and don't even get anything out of it. It's just dumb. That's super smart. For me right now, I have 6 grown children. And what I found is crazy, is it takes actually more intentionality in parenting with grown children than it did with those at home. And so I always have advice. I always have opinions. And what I'll do is I will literally put a number of questions that I'm going to ask that are unrelated to anything that I want to talk about in their lives before I will start into a subject that matters. Here's another thing I do with my kids. Like, one of my kids I've noticed will only talk if we're kicking a ball or throwing a ball. Yeah. And I will kick or throw the ball until he wants to stop. Yeah. And I won't stop until then. And I won't ask about anything important until that's done. So those are some pre-decisions. If I go into a meeting that, and I'm, you know, the boss of the meeting, I will find that I talk too much. I'll overshare. And so I'll say, I'm not going to say anything in the meeting until 5 people have spoken. And I'll sit there and wait, you know, until it comes in. So just little things like that in different areas. I will, before I'm going to talk on a subject, I will listen to 5 different people to hear what they say on the subject to make sure I'm coming in as a student rather than an expert. Different things like that.
Which are also games and rehearsals, and which makes complete sense to me. You mentioned input a couple times. What's your input process like? And so what I'm curious about is, like, I'm deliberate about reading. Like, people sometimes say to me, wow, you read a lot of books. And I'll say, well, it's because I'm deliberate about it. Like, when I drive to get a haircut, I'm either scheduled a call for that half hour or I'm listening to a specific audiobook. And I've got the next one on it because, you know, this guy Lou Tice, I heard him say, don't run to a goal, run through a goal. That people stop and often take a victory nap. And then next thing you know, 3 months have piled up and you go. So what's your input, both as, because you're a content creator, you're doing massive, big sermon series on a big to a big audience, to a big congregation. From a creative standpoint, what does input look like for you?
Yeah. So in different levels, one thing is just to grow my mind. There are, I'd say probably 6 or 7 people that they are kind of like my like a drug dealer would be to an addict. They're kind of like my content friends. Mm-hmm. So almost every time they recommend something, it's really, really helpful. I could ask 20 other people and they haven't read anything. You know, so all the time, if there's someone I respect, what have you read recently? Yep. What have you seen? Send me anything. Please, please, please send me anything. And when they do, I listen to it all the time immediately. And so it's really hard to go and find great content, but when you're around great people, they can help curate great content immediately. So if I am listening to something, chances are it's going to be really, really helpful. When it comes to what I deliver, this is what is kind of painful. It almost takes over-listening, over-researching, overthinking for anything to make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I'll come in super early in the morning and I'll watch YouTube, I'll watch three YouTube videos on 2x speed. I'll go and read 8 articles. I'll start brainstorming and I want to just throw a bunch of stuff in my mind before I'm going to produce it. And then I almost need like a day or two for it just to start working. Mm-hmm. And I'll put ideas together and then I'll listen for conversations. And it's almost like I've always got my antennas up, always listening. And then I try to take any kind of information I bring in and start connecting it. Then when I start connecting it, I start to try to organize it. And then once I organize, I'm trying to create kind of hooks. Like what are you're an expert at creating emotional hooks in your content. You ask a question, you tell something funny, you draw them in. So for me, it's almost like a beautiful game thing where you're just taking it in, and then let it simmer, take it in. And it's painful. It takes time. It's never fun. It's always hard. It's never easy. And I don't know any other ways to get there.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. I was hoping your answer wouldn't be it just comes to me in the shower and then I have the whole.
It doesn't. I hate it. My wife who gave birth 6 times would say, don't ever say this again. But it feels like my version of giving content birth.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard. It's hard.
I tell people that all the time. Like they go, I tell them books are hard for me to write and they seem surprised by that. And I say, no, they're very. And I'm a negative person, which is why I work at positivity. I don't wake up sunny. I just know positivity is a better ROI than negativity. So I work really hard at maintaining, like rejoice is a choice and I have to choose that sometimes 1,000 times. It's not natural. I only have 2 questions left, but one of the stories I really liked in your book was about the tennis coach coming to encourage you. Drove 90 miles.
Yep.
You got smoked 6-0. It was a really tough day, broke a racket and you felt super frustrated. And one, it was amazing that he was willing to pour into you that way. Yep. But I thought what was interesting is that it kind of reminds me of what your counselor said. Like in that moment, you felt really angry. And I think every good leader who's got a lot of energy has a degree of anger that they learn over time how to channel into passion. Channel into energy. That's what my counselor keeps talking to me about is anger is not a bad thing unless you channel it the wrong way. It can be, there's a righteousness to it. There's a passion to it. So I think it's fascinating that your counselor said high energy activities because some people would go, what Craig Rochelle needs, he should go do yoga and be quiet and he needs to knit. But he said, no, that's a core thing. Let's feed that in a really healthy way. How have you over time learned to channel that full strength, Craig? Because there's been times when I've rolled over people if I'm not channeling it the right way. How have you learned to channel it the right way?
What my counselor said is, I am created to work hard, to go hard, to produce. And the analogy he said, you're a racehorse is supposed to run. Yeah. You're not going to be happy sitting by the lake. You're not going to be happy. What we're not going to do is we're not going to try to tell you to slow down. We're going to help you to run faster, but run well. What we have to do in leadership, everybody is wired different. And so I'm not going to tell anybody else to go do jujitsu and fly a plane and you're created to run hard. There's some people that are sprinters. Other people are distance runners. Some people are artists. Some people are systematic. Others are creative. Some are good in the morning. Some are good in the evening. Some are great with people. Others shouldn't be allowed around people. What we want to do is we want to find out where you're uniquely strong and also where are you weak? In my world, what I found is that sometimes when you intentionally create the systems around your weaknesses, you can find strengths there. For example, I test very, very low on creativity. Reading comprehension was my lowest subject in school. And what do I do now? I create and I write. So why? Because I've learned the disciplines around them that work for me. I've had to work very, 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 very hard to develop them. I also am ridiculously extreme. If I told you about some of my weird extremes, my weird habits, mindsets, blah, 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 you'd go, you are so weird. Yes. Greatness is found in the extremes. I would say to everyone listening here, wherever you're weird, press into it. Wherever you have like quirky things, press into it. Greatness is found in the extremes. And then if you're working with someone like that, you've got to accept the totality of who they are. With their great extremes, there could come some really big downsides. That's part of it. Don't be afraid of the downsides. You don't have to, you either don't manage them, you delegate them, or you create systems to compensate for them. But go be the weirdest, most unique, most extreme version of you. And know where you're weak and vulnerable and where you make bad decisions, and then pre-decide to make the right ones. Predetermine in this situation, I'm going to do whatever, or I'm not going to do whatever. Make the hard decisions easier to make. Make the dangerous ones, create more distance. And then if you just, if you think ahead, you can work with your unusual tendencies. You can protect yourself from your unusual bad ones, and you can have a much more productive life. You're smart, John, but you know, so much of where you are is not based on just natural talent, but more of what you've developed, your disciplines, your habits, your mindsets, your thought process. You're grueling, you're showing back up, you're not giving up. You know, you worked a long time to be what other people call an overnight success, right? And it's the things that no one sees that bring about the things that everyone wants. Don't be afraid to do what's right when you're invisible, so that you can be celebrated one day when other people know you. It's what you do when no one's looking that matters.
Yeah. And it's fun to think about. I know I have some extremes that I like. That's what's fun, because you and I are similar in a lot of that, where I know if I said, here's the list of things I'm doing, you go, oh, I got that list too. And yours would be different, but it'd be every bit as fun and extreme. And sometimes I'll tell friends that don't feel that way, and they look at me like I'm speaking Swahili, and I'm like, oh, you don't track that? Oh, okay. Okay. Like, when I share, sometimes it's funny the reactions I get, but I 100% agree with that. I think it's the only way for me. It's the only way to do it, which is, again, it was encouraging to hear that your counselor again said, hey, go do high adrenaline things. You're built for high adrenaline things. That's who you are. Because I think sometimes we give people the opposite advice they need to hear.
But say, my whole life, they've been telling me, slow down, take more time off, you know, think more, blah, 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 blah. And that does not work for me. In the same way, going and flying airplanes isn't going to work for somebody else. You have to find the rhythms that work for you. And so I'm trying to help people and give them permission to be different.
I love it. So, new books, Think Ahead. Last two questions, Craig. These are easy ones. What's on your Mount Rushmore of books? So, obviously Bible, but like, what would you say are books you've given away more than any other book, other than your own, obviously?
So, I'd say soundtracks. It only takes finish. A goal. It takes you finish. Yeah. So, no, actually, I am a big fan of your work and have been for years. I compliment you because you earned your way to influence with just good content. I mean, just from the ground up, you earned your way there. I would say if you go way back in time, I'll give you the ones I've given away. Back the classics, kind of Good to Great. The E-Myth Revisited by Gerber is, you know, in systems. I think Clear's work on Atomic Habits is something everybody should read. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I make every guy that dates my daughters read, kind of learning how money would work. I like some other ones, like kind of for parenting. I like The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. It was really not about parenting, but I like that. I like the Negotiation book by
Chris Voss?
Chris Voss, yes. Oddly enough, I like that on Negotiation, Never Split the Difference. I think it's widely helpful. I like this book was unusual. It's really, really big Rabbi Daniel Lappin called Thou Shalt Prosper. Yep. It kind of dignifies capitalism and caring for people and serving others. And so those are some that I recommend quite often. Recently, a couple that hit the list in the last year was Unreasonable Hospitality. I liked a lot.
Oh, yeah.
by Gallarda, and then From Strength to Strength by Brooks, I thought was really good for someone in their 40s or 50s.
Man, that is a great list. That is so. When I ask how's the input going, these are the kind of responses you can have when there's a lot of input. Last question, Craig. Where can people find out more about the book?
You can go to craigrochelle.com or on most forms of social media. We're there posting lots of content to keep you distracted from other things.
Yeah, there you go. Craig, this was a blast. I could geek out with you for hours about the systems. It's always fun to run into you at things like GLS or other events that we both get to do. It was super fun. And you've been super encouraging me over the years, texting me encouragement along the way. So I really appreciate you making some time for this. I know you got 100 of these for the book coming out, but thanks for joining me today, buddy.
Hey, yeah, thanks for who you are. And I just appreciate you as the way you care for your family. And you always add value everywhere you are. So thanks for your friendship.
Thank you so much for listening to my interview with Craig Rochelle today. We'll put all the links in the show notes as always. And thank you for reviewing this podcast. You guys write the absolute best reviews, and I really appreciate that. Please make sure you like or follow or subscribe, whatever the kids are saying these days, and keep those reviews coming. I'll see you next week. And remember, all it takes is a goal.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast and to get access to today's show notes and exclusive content from John Acuff, visit acuff.me/podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast.
I've been really surprised at how many people who listen to this podcast have reached out to me about having me speak at their events. I love that. And here's why. Over the last 13 years, I've had the honor to help hundreds of companies like Nissan, Walmart, Microsoft, and Comedy Central at events around the world. And during that time, I've developed 3 big goals for your event. Number one, I want to slingshot your audience into the best year they've ever had. Whether I'm opening, closing, or somewhere in the middle of the event, I want to launch everyone out of that room with actionable, memorable things that they can apply to their work and lives immediately. Number two, my second goal, I want the sound team engaged and laughing. The sound team has heard it all. They have. And if I can make them laugh and learn along the way, the audience is going to absolutely love the keynote. And number three, my third goal, I want you to get text messages during the keynote. My favorite sentence to hear from you after I speak is, "John, my phone was blowing up during your keynote." I'm there to make you look like a rock star, not me. If your boss texts you during my speech and compliments you on how well the event is going, then I know I've done my job. Whether it's virtual or live, 10,000 people in an arena, or 15 sales team members on WebEx or Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I'd love to help you with your next event. Fill out the quick form at acuff.me/speaking to check my availability. That's acuff.me/speaking.